1039 1450 WKXL. It's Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and our local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And our first guest today, one of the top sports journalists in the country, without a doubt. And not only is she a New Hampshire native, she still lives here. And we're very happy to have NBC's Lynn Snearson joining us today on Feldis and Kale. Lynn, how are you?
Well, it's Derby week, so I couldn't be more excited. How are you?
We are doing great, and I know it's a busy time of year for you as the Triple Crown season gets underway. Saturday, of course, will be the 147th running at Churchill Downs, the Run for the Roses, the greatest 2 minutes in sports, as they say. And Lynn, how close to normal will things be this Saturday at Churchill Downs?
Well, we're not there yet.
No.
It'll certainly be better last year when no fans were allowed and really just only a limited number of media, and everything was just like no one had ever seen before. They're limiting the crowd to 40,000. Normally on Derby Day, you could have as many as 150,000 if the weather's good. So we're not quite there, but, you know, we're getting there. And I think at this stage, we're all just happy that we're running, that racing had a great year in terms of business-wise. And, you know, as long as the horses are healthy and happy and those 40,000 fans, everybody's going to be very, very happy to see.
And Lynn, how is it going to work with the horses being socially distanced? I'm joking. That's a joke.
Well, I hope they're socially distanced enough that we don't have one running up on the heels of somebody else. We want a safe, clean trip for everybody. We don't want them in tight quarters where they're, you know, banging each other around like pinball machines. We want hopefully it'll be socially distanced enough that everybody's got a clean run straight to the wire.
That sounds great. And we got just looking online right now. We got the odds. Horse names are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
We have Essential Quality at is leading right now with a 5-2 odds of winning. Hot Rod Charlie at 6-1. Medina Spirit 8-1. Rock Your World 8-1 as well. Known Agenda 12-1 and Highly Motivated 15-1. There's a bunch of other ones, but those are the top rated ones. What is the sense out there of how this is going to unfold, and do you think those odds make some sense here right now?
Well, everything's going to drift by post time. All those odds will change because all the wise guys, they always come up, you know, with a hot horse. And, you know, he's definitely an overlay. And, you know, this one's the one that's going to jump up and you're going to make $1 million on him. So but those rumors always go sweeping around before the race. Right now, the horse is supposedly the secret. The big secret is supposed to be Mandaloon, who's trained by Brad Cox. But Brad Cox also trains Essential Quality. And he is a very deserving favorite. He and Mandaloon were out on the track this morning, and they both could not have looked any better. I mean, they are just in peak condition. Their energy, their attitude, I mean, they are on it. They were up on the bridle. And you'd have to say that Essential Quality will go off as the favorite. And he's undefeated. You know, he's done nothing wrong. He takes his race, you know, he doesn't need to take his racetrack with him. He's just won at all different tracks all over the country. And he could be very, very good. And he's owned by the ruler of Dubai, and the over in the UAE, was bred by him. And they very, very, very much want to win a Kentucky Derby in America. So we'll see if it happens.
See if it happens. The Mandaloon right now is at a 15-1. Do you think that's going to go up as we go?
Well, it depends. You know, like right now he's the one everybody's whispering, you know, the wise guys. By tomorrow at post time, people could be off him and on to somebody else. I mean, that happens every year. We never know until we see what the final odds are.
Right. And I know Ken wants to jump in here, but I'll just say that my favorite name in the bunch is currently a 30-1 odds. It's Soup and Sandwich.
Yes, can I tell you why that horse is named that?
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay, all right. He's owned by Mrs. Charlotte Weber. Mrs. Weber is the heiress, an heiress, to the Campbell Soup fortune.
Ah, interesting.
Her grandfather was John Dorrance, and he invented the process for condensing soup. So Mrs. Weber bred that horse. She is just an empress in our sport. She's been involved for over 50 years, and she's had a lot of champions, a lot of Breeders' Cup winners, and won a lot of the most important races, but she's never won the Kentucky Derby. So there's a sentimental, a lot of people would love to see Mrs. Weber in the winner's circle holding up that big trophy, and maybe she poured some Campbell's soup in it.
There you go. Wow. Soup and sandwiches. That is a great name. So Brad Cox says two of the most talked about horses, if not the most talked about horses, coming up in Saturday's Derby, and as you said, Essential Quality and Mandaloon. I see Todd Pletcher has four horses in the Derby, and Bob Baffert surprisingly has just one.
Yeah, this has not been a great year for Bob. Started out the Triple Crown season, he had four, and he had a horse called Life is Good, whom everybody said could be his next Triple Crown winner, and one by one, they fell off by the wayside. They had another horse named Concert Tour who was, you know, second string, who stepped up to be his starting quarterback, if you will. And then he turned around and kind of started backing up and not moving forward. And Bob said just yesterday that I usually come in here with a horse and, you know, in the top five. This year I'm coming in with one in the top 10. But usually he comes in with not just a horse in the top five, usually comes in with the best horse, and that's why he's won two Triple Crowns in a lot, you know, one in 3 years. But Medina Spirit, nice horse, really nice horse, bargain basement price. They found him for only $1,000.
Whoa. And
yeah, he slipped through in the sales. But he's going to have to really, really step up his game, and I would be surprised to see Medina Spirit win, frankly.
Even though he's trained by Bob Baffert.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it's like we all say, you know, I've never seen a trainer drag a horse over the finish line.
Yeah. Very, very true. So, and Todd Pletcher, what about his four entries in the field?
You know, Todd's won the Derby twice. He certainly won, you know, he's having a great year. His stock had slipped just a tiny bit to these new guys like Brad Cox coming up and getting all the horses and Chad Brown. But Todd's been showing everybody why he's been nominated to the Hall of Fame this year in his first year of eligibility and why he will be a unanimous election to the Hall of Fame. You can never count him out. And Known Agenda is the best of the four. You know, Todd put blinkers on him a couple races back, and boy, he's just been super sharp since. And this is a horse who is absolutely peaking at the right time. So do not overlook Known Agenda.
We won't. We will not. Any fillies in the field this year?
No. And we've got 14 full field going in the Oaks on Friday. And I just did a story about with a horse named Maracuja. I talked to her trainer and I talked to her jockey last night doing my reporting. And it's an interesting story because her jockey is Kendrick Carmouche. And he's the guy's 37 years old. He's in the Hall of Fame at a couple of tracks. He's been leading rider everywhere. He just won his first Grade One race last year in New York. And he's going to be riding in the Derby for the first time and the Kentucky Oaks for the first time. He's riding Bourbonic for Todd Pletcher. He's riding Maracuja in the Oaks. And he is the first black jockey to ride in the Kentucky Derby in 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, he's been very outspoken about all the social justice issues. And as have a lot of the jockeys, they've stood behind him and supported him. And it's been very, very gratifying to see. And when I was talking with him last night, I said, you know, can we just talk about the horse, or, you know, do you want to talk about the other stuff? And he said, nah, you know, I've talked about the other stuff enough, and, you know, I've been out there. And, you know, let's just talk about racing. I said, that's great. Let's just talk about the horse. So,
are there some horses, Lynn, being held back from the Derby, for the Preakness or for other big stakes races that are coming up?
Absolutely. In fact, I had mentioned Concert Tour from Baffert.
Yeah.
And he's in Kentucky right now, and he was supposed to be in the field, and everything was, you know, a go. And Bob just did, you know, he just did not like the way that horse was, was coming up to the race, and so he pulled him, and he said, we're going to skip this, and we're going to head for the Preakness. A couple other horses, Caddo River, trained by Brad Cox. Brad was supposed to have three, and he pulled him this week. You know, he said, he's not showing me what I need to see from him right now, so we'll take a look later. A couple other horses that were supposed to be in, Chad Brown had Crowded Trade, and there's a horse called Wayburn, and his trainer said, I'm skipping the Derby, I'm skipping the Preakness, and I'm concentrating on the Belmont with him. So, yeah, the trainers are, they're very good. Horsemen are very, very good. They're horse whispers. And when their horse tells me, I'm not ready, I'm not right, I might be getting sick, I might have an injury that you haven't detected yet, or I'm just not mature enough physically or intellectually or emotionally, I need more time. And they're listening. They listen to them when the horse tells them, I need more time.
Lynn, you mentioned that about 40,000 can be allowed into stadium there for the Kentucky Derby, typically about 150,000, I think you said. I was fortunate to go to a Kentucky Derby a long time ago. People wear all those fancy hats. That's what it's in part known for. What's going on with the masks coming up this weekend, and do you anticipate some fancy masks?
Yes, I absolutely think that, I know that some people who are, it's all about, like you say, the outfits.
Yeah.
And on Friday, which is the, the Lilies for the Phillies, Saturday is the Run for the Roses, so everybody wears pink. Even the gentlemen, they wear pink sports coats, pink shirts, pink ties, whatever. Everybody wears pink. And the event does support breast cancer research. So I know that there are a lot of people who are coordinating their outfits, having them made to match their hats or match their sport coat and their tie or whatever. That is definitely happening.
Lynn Snearson is our guest, working for NBC this week, preparing for the Kentucky Derby on Saturday, the Run for the Roses. I think the post time is, 6:57 Eastern time? It seems to get pushed back every year.
Well, it's post time is 6:57,
yeah.
But the coverage on the network starts much earlier in the afternoon.
Oh, yes, yes.
Long days of shows, and also cover a lot of the races on the undercard. And sometimes those races are actually more competitive and more interesting and more better than the big races. So we've got a full slate of racing. Lots of different graded stakes race, grade ones for horses in all different divisions, for fillies and mares, for boys on the turf, on the main track, sprints, routes. I mean, it's a great 2 days of racing.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And as I mentioned, you're working for NBC, but you're also working for a couple of publications as well.
I do. It's the life of a freelancer. You keep hustling. Now that we don't have any live racing at all in New England anymore, which is the saddest thing to me.
Yeah.
But I write for the Blood Horse. I write for U.S. Racing. I write for a couple of other publications. But, it's interesting. Like everyone else, our world changed during the pandemic. It had been changing anyway, but this just made it more so. And, a lot of people got laid off. A lot of people got furloughed. The industry thought that when this all happened, the powers that be thought, well, this is going to kill racing because we can't have fans on track. And a lot of tracks were just shut down completely. But what happened was the tracks that stayed open and were running had handles that were off the charts, astronomical, things they had never seen before. And then tracks reopened without fans, and everybody was betting because people were sitting home.
Yeah.
And they were bored and they had nothing to do. And the gamblers, at that time, you didn't have a bunch of other sports going on.
Right.
So a whole new market of people who never cared about horse racing or cared to bet it, discovered it. And we had the best year ever that we've ever had.
That
in
is
terms
unbelievable.
Of people betting.
That's
yeah.
unbelievable when you compare it to the other sports and how, many of them suffered, not only financially, but certainly ratings-wise as well. But horse racing really was a beneficiary of you know, I mean, unlikely beneficiary of COVID-19.
It was absolutely so.
Yeah.
And so the racetracks figured, well, you know, gee, we can make a lot more money with a lot fewer people. And they figured out that, you know, why do I need to hire Lynn and pay her plane fare and her hotel and her rental car and her expenses and bring her in here for a week, 10 days, you know, to write all these wonderful stories about all these pretty horses when people don't care. They're going to bet on the races anyway. And then the other thing that's completely changed our business, like, again, like everybody else's, is technology.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The internet changed the world, as we know, changed the way everybody conducts business. And social media totally changed traditional media. So all the individual stables, the individual trainers, the jockeys, they all have their own social media accounts. They all have Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat, and they've all, you know, got a kid or know how to do it themselves. You know, they've got a Gen Zer or a millennial that they've hired. They hire their own kids to be their social media director, and they're breaking their own news. Now, a lot of us are getting, you know, trying to find out what's going on with 14 horses in the Derby. You just check somebody's social media account, and it's got like, oh, my horse got sick this morning. We're not running in the Derby. Like, oh, okay, well, that's news. You know?
It's amazing.
Changed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, And do you think that will sustain, I mean, over the years? I mean, it's certainly been a big year and an interesting one for horse racing, but will it sustain? And do you think it has sustaining power?
Well, I do think so, because, we gained an entire new class of fans in terms of, you know, demographics, and all of a sudden younger people discovered racing. Mm-hmm. And before, they could have cared less. And now, you know, the industry was smart. You know, they did a lot of online shows, and they taught people how to bet.
Yeah.
And you know, Ken, you know, when you go to the track and you start making some money and picking some horses, you're like, wow, this is fun. I can't wait to go back tomorrow.
Yeah. And my biggest complaint was, you know, when I used to go to Rockingham or Suffolk Downs over the years, even Saratoga, that, you know, oh, there's so much time. You know, between races, you know, there's like a half hour, 25 minutes to a half hour between races. What do you do? But now, you know, if you sit at home and you watch TVG, for example, I mean, you can be betting, you know, five races within the course of, you know, 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and you know, and what's indicative, too, of this younger generation, Hot Rod Charlie.
Yep.
Is trained by Doug O'Neill. He's won the Kentucky Derby twice, as we know, with All Have Another and Nyquist. Okay, you know, big trainer in California. Big trainer. Great guy. His nephew is 28 years old, and he is a part owner of this horse. He formed a partnership, the kid, with five of his football teammates and fraternity brothers from Brown University. Okay.
Wow.
And these guys, the football team at Brown, his frat, they never knew about racing. They never paid attention to it. They didn't, you know, they didn't care. And through Patrick O'Neill, he turned them all onto it. And he was saying when they moved into the frat house, his first question was, oh, we've got to get, you know, in this living room TV, you know, in this big flat screen, we've got to get TVG, And all the guys were going, what's TVG? And he says, now the whole fraternity sitting there watching TVG and betting on their smartphones.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. So I hope it continues. And I know, you know, it's sad that there is no live racing any longer in New Hampshire. I shed a tear every time I pass Rockingham Park, and it's always sad because we used to go down there quite a bit. But unfortunately, that's the way of the world these days. And so, Lynn and Dan, Lynn, do you think the favorite is going to win it? The you know, odds-on favorite, Essential Quality. I mean, you've got to have him. You know, in your trifectas and in your win place and show betting, but. What? Give us two more that you would put in there.
Okay, I do like, I think Known Agenda. I definitely like him a little bit.
All right.
Okay. And to me, one of the you know, if you're looking for the hot horse, you know, the wise guy horse. To me, it's Superstock. That horse is trained by Steve Asmussen, of course, Hall of Fame trainer, mm-hmm. He will this fall become the all-time winningest trainer in the history of racing. He's been to the Derby 21 times, 26 times maybe, never won, trained three horses of the year, and Superstock has looked absolutely super all week out on the track. I mean, he has looked amazing. And, you know, Steve is an incredible horseman, and I think this could be Steve's year, and I think this is the horse who's sitting on go.
And we know Dan's money is going to be on Soup and Sandwich.
So that's going to be on Soup and Sandwich in just about a half hour.
There
too.
You go. Well, Lynn
Make sure it's Campbell's, right?
Right, you got
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Campbell's Tomato Soup. Lynn Snearson, always great to catch up with you, and we will chat soon, I hope. But thanks for your insight, as
thanks,
always.
Thanks, Lynn.
Oh, wait, you got to give me your pick. You know, oh, you just did. Okay, Soup and Sandwich, yeah.
Ken, who are you going to go with?
Well, I like Charlie, you know.
Hot Rod Charlie.
In honor of our good friend Charlie Sherman, I think I'll put some money on him.
I think that's a very good – and, you know, I do think that horse has a pretty good chance, too. I really do.
Yeah.
I would definitely use him.
I will include him, definitely. Definitely.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Lynn, thank you. Thank you, and we'll catch up soon.
I hope so. Take care.
Bye-bye. Okay, Lynn Snearson working for NBC Sports as part of the Kentucky Derby team for Saturday's elongated coverage. Even though the race doesn't begin till 6:57, they have coverage starting at like 6 a.m. or something like that. Maybe not that early. It's Feldis and Kale, 103.9, 1450 WKXL. We're presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9, 1450 WKXL, Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and our local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And if you've missed any episodes, shame on you, but
yes,
you can always find them at nhtalkradio.com. And we have an interesting guest coming up in just a few minutes, Leah Plunkett. What can you tell us, Dan, about Leah?
She's just a wonderful person. She's a friend. She's an attorney. She worked in legal aid. She's a law professor. Yeah, she ran for executive council this last election cycle. Feminist advocate, really advances a lot of different issues. She's an author, too, of a book called Sharonhood about the issues surrounding sharing information about your children in this social media age and some of the unique issues surrounding that and legal issues surrounding that. So very interesting, accomplished person, and it'd be great to have a discussion with her.
Sharonhood. I love that title. Very creative title. No doubt about that. Sharonhood. And we'll be talking with Leah Plunkett about that in just a few minutes here on Feldis and Kale. Today, by the way, is Babe Ruth Day.
Oh, really?
And why is it Babe Ruth Day? And it's not just random, because April 27th, 1947, was when the Yankees honored Babe Ruth on Babe Ruth Day in the Bronx. So this is known as Babe Ruth Day.
Well, that makes sense.
And it's also Morse Code Day. You ever get into Morse code, Dan?
We should do an entire show
In Morse code, yes.
Yeah, maybe today is the day it's Morse code day.
The dots and dashes and all that. Well, you know what? There is actually Morse code. Believe it or not, there is Morse code on the left field wall at Fenway Park.
No kidding.
Yeah. And it's,
What does it say?
It's initials. T-A-Y and J-A-Y. R-Y. It's just initials. And it's for Thomas A. Yawkey and Gene R. Yawkey, who owned the Red Sox for many, many years.
There you go.
And there's Morse code on the left field scoreboard at Fenway Park. It's down at the bottom. It's kind of like near the ball and strike indicators. The balls and strikes lights out there on the left field wall. So next time you're at Fenway or see a game on TV, look for the Morse code on the left field wall at Fenway Park. It's also a School Bus Drivers Day, Dan. School bus drivers, and they are very much unheralded in our society.
Absolutely. And the school bus drivers, and there's shortage of school bus drivers in New Hampshire, but you know they are frontline workers right now in COVID, and they're doing incredible work. They're out there. They're serving our community, as you mentioned, Ken, unheralded. And let's all, next time you see a school bus driver, thank them. for their work. They're helping our kids, our communities, our schools, and especially now in this pandemic.
And be careful around those school buses too.
Yeah.
I mean, when they are stopped, when they have the lights on and the signs out, don't pass a school bus. I see it often.
You do?
That people do actually. Well. Especially I will say the worst area for this I see in Concord is Loudoun Road. That people just, you know, they're on their way down Loudoun Road and they fly by these school buses.
Don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, even though they're, you know, they might be in a lane removed from the school bus, don't do it. You just never know.
Yeah.
When a kid is going to dart out and go right in front of you. So, don't fly by those school buses when they're stopped and they have their lights on and they have the signs out. It's just, just don't do it. I know you might be in a hurry, but it could be tragic. So just be careful. So a salute to school buses who I'm sure not only under-heralded, but probably underpaid as well. So we salute them today. It's also National Devil Dog Day. And devil dogs would always go good with a glass of milk. I'm sure Amy Hall would agree with that. And National Prime Rib Day being celebrated today.
I did not know that. I think I might call an audible on dinner plans.
There you go. National Prime Rib Day being celebrated today. So we'll celebrate it here on Feldis and Kale. We're glad you could join us today at 103.9 1450 WKXL. NHTalkRadio.com, and we are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and our local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9 1450 WKXL, Feldis and Kale, being presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and our local New Hampshire dairy farmers. NHTalkRadio.com, you can find all the editions, all the past Feldis and Kale shows on, or at least most of them, on nhtalkradio.com, as well as some of the other great programming here on WKXL as well.
We've had a lot of great guests, Ken.
We have.
Over this short but illustrious tenure here at New Hampshire News Talk Radio, Feldis and Kale, WKXL, 103.9 FM, 1450 AM. Everyone from Senator Jeb Bradley to U.S. Senator Maggie Hassan to, you know, Kayla Montgomery from Planned Parenthood to, you know, you name it. We've had some wonderful guests, and we're really fortunate to have that. And looking forward to our next guest, Professor and Attorney Leah Plunkett.
Yeah, and looking forward to Leah joining the program very shortly. And and don't forget Dave Parker, who's written a new book, was
Dave
on
Parker.
The show. The great Dave Parker, who probably should be in the Hall of Fame.
He should be.
Yeah, but and more great guests to come here on Feldis and Kale. So join us, and don't forget, WKXL AM and FM is your home for Boston Celtics basketball. So you can join WKXL for great Celtics action all year long. So don't miss out. And joining us on this portion of Feldis and Kale is author, attorney, professor Leah Plunkett. Leah, how are you today?
I'm doing wonderfully. How are you doing?
Oh, we are doing great. Dan is here as well, and I know, Leah, you live in Concord, full-time working mom, two young children, and they are fourth-generation Granite Staters. Happy to hear that.
That's right.
Yeah. Dan and I were just talking about your book, Sharonhood, and I love that title. That is great. Sharonhood, Why Should We Think Before We Talk About Our Kids Online? Tell us a little bit about the book, Leah.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be with you both. I wrote Sharonhood, Why We Should Think Before We Talk About Our Kids Online, through MIT Press, came out in fall 2019. And I wrote it because I was doing a lot of work, wearing my law professor hat, on kids and digital data privacy. And I started doing that research at the same time as I became a mom to first one, then two kids. And my initial research was really focused on what schools and other institutions were doing about our kids' digital data privacy. And I had this moment one day, I'd been doing some research and decided to take a break, and I hopped on Facebook, and I thought, wait a second, there's laws at the state and federal level about what schools and other institutions can do with kids' data, but as a parent, for a grandparent, aunt, uncle, other trusted adult, but especially as a parent, I can hop on Facebook right now and say almost anything I want about my child. There's certain outer boundaries. I can't violate criminal law, for instance, and say something, heaven forbid, that's abusive, but I can take a picture of their social security card and put it online. Please don't do that. I can write a 5-page essay about how frustrating it is that they won't sleep through the night. And I just have this kind of whoa moment of, we should think a little bit more about what we as parents, grandparents, and all trusted adults in kids' lives are doing with kids' private information in today's digital world. And certainly in the last 14 months, where, gosh, for those of us that have been lucky enough to be able to stay remote and stay safe, we've been putting more than ever before about our kids into digital devices and services.
And once you post it, Leah, you can't unpost it. So what is the general best practices that you would recommend for any parent out there listening?
You're absolutely right. Once it is online, there's no way to ever really get it off. First, I recommend some basic rules of safety. Don't post a child's full name, exact date, and location of birth. I'm a former consumer rights and legal aid lawyer, and in those capacities I saw, especially my consumer rights work, some of the things that could happen that could harm kids in terms of identity theft with private information. Next, never post pictures of your children if they are not fully dressed. Even a very innocent fun day at the beach picture can have an uninvited gaze on it, and we do know, sadly, that a lot of abusive images of kids online are photoshopped or otherwise redone images of real kids. Last but certainly not least, I encourage parents to apply what I sometimes call a holiday card test. So I will date myself and say I'm the tail end of Gen X. I remember when people, including my grandma, used to send out these amazing typed up, maybe a craft initially, but then eventually printed out, holiday updates with news that was appropriate for everyone from a great aunt to a boss to hear. So think about a holiday card rule of thumb. And if you would not put it on paper and mail it to a couple of hundred people that span everyone from your great aunt to your boss and beyond, then probably don't post it on the internet.
And we're talking with Leah Plunkett, author, attorney, law professor, here on WKXL, Feltus and Kale, 103.9 FM, 1450 AM. If you want to learn more, Sharenthood is the book that Leah wrote, MIT Press, Sharenthood. Leah, you are also an advocate for working families. Talk about some of the issues confronting working families in this pandemic.
As a full-time working mom of two kids, I care passionately about the health of our families and our children. And the last 14 months have been brutal for working families. We are not sufficiently represented in our elected officials and at the state level. Right now, I would say we have a governor who does not seem to understand the challenges facing working families. And although we have a number of wonderful state elected officials who are doing everything they can, and we have a wonderful federal delegation, we do have someone in the corner office who does not seem to get that it is next to impossible, if not impossible, to hold down one or more jobs, all trying to teach your kids, keep them safe, figure out how to keep your business afloat. And I would say a couple of the key areas, Dan, that have been particularly bad for our working families during the pandemic. First, we do not have enough investment in early childhood education or primary and secondary education in the state. We do not have adequate protection for paid family and medical leave. And we also right now have a governor who does not seem to understand that lifting a mask mandate when we're still in the middle of a global pandemic is exposing our kids, who the younger ones, and my two are 6 and 10, are still unvaccinated, and we don't know when they'll be eligible. It is exposing them to some measure of risk. So I would say that we really have seen a failure from the corner office at Governor Sununu and his team to understand that the global pandemic has gutted long-standing support that people might have been able to access in their communities and through their friend and family networks, because at least until recently when vaccination rates went up, we were cut off from the people who could normally help us in times of crisis. And tragically, many people didn't even have that kind of family and friend safety net to start with. So it has been a brutal time. And I think getting through the, hopefully, knock on wood, end of this and rebuilding from it needs to be the top priority for our state and federal government.
Our guest is Leah Plunkett, and she is author of the book Sharenthood. And Sharenthood, Why We Should Think Before We Talk About Our Kids Online. And we'll have to take a quick break here, Leah. Be right back. Feldis and Kale, 1039, 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039, 1450 WKXL, Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and our local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Leah Plunkett, our guest, author, attorney, professor, you name it, mother of two. And Leah, every family, I think, dealt a little bit differently, I guess, with COVID-19. Of course, we're still dealing with it. How about your family? How did you deal with your two youngsters and family with COVID-19?
Some days we dealt with it better than others,
right?
That's for
sure. Like everybody.
So we have been incredibly fortunate. My husband and I have been able to keep our jobs and work safely from home, and we are profoundly grateful. We have also, as safety has permitted, been able to bubble with a handful of close family and friends. That has made all the difference. But it has been a challenge, even with all of our good fortune. It is almost impossible to try to be on your own remote meeting while getting your kids on their remote school, for instance.
Yeah.
And I recognize, again, incredible privilege of still having a job and still having a job I can do remotely. It is also a real strain on children's mental health and well-being and basic sense of security. So we went from, you know, even early March of 2020, there was a bit more, you know, wash your hands, cover your mouth when you sneeze, but we did that stuff with kids already. And we went to a world in which our kids felt, fortunately, basically secure in terms of that their expectations of their routines, their expectations of being able to do their activities, their expectations of being able to see friends and family. And to tell kids, you have to stay home and you have to stay away from some people you love the most, like your grandparents or your best friends, because being in close physical proximity could potentially get you or someone else very sick, which could potentially kill them. Horrifying. And it's real, and we have to put safety first and be honest about it, but that just rocked our kids' world, and I think it's safe to say rocked the worlds of all the kids in the Granite State. That is profoundly destabilizing psychologically and emotionally, and I really worry that in this state, which was already under-resourced in terms of mental health care resources for all our kids, that we are not doing enough to get our kids through and then rebuild a sense of security and mental health and basic well-being when we're able to get to the next normal.
Are they back in school yet?
Ours are. We have been very fortunate. Their school has been open in person most of the past school year.
Wow.
And that has been profoundly valuable. Mm-hmm. I can't say enough good things about the school leadership and teachers and the fact that our kids have been able to be with their peers and their teachers. And I know that each school process and each school district process has been different and is complicated. And I really am grateful that ours have been able to mostly be in person.
Well, that is a good thing because I know the kids respond very well to that. I have grandchildren about the same age as your children at 6 and 9. They live in Massachusetts, but I know how thrilled they are. They've only been back in school now for a few weeks, but how thrilled they are to get back with their friends. So it makes a great deal of difference, I think, certainly from a mental perspective, probably more than anything else.
I agree. And look, I am a lousy primary school teacher. You know, I mean well, and I try, but I am not trained for this, and my kids know it. And I really worry about the kids' ability, all of our kids, to stay on track with their progress, academic, social, and emotional. And I do give huge credit to the amazing ingenuity that teachers and school leaders and kids and parents have shown in making the best of digital technologies to keep school going. As somebody who has been researching and writing about law and digital educational technologies in our K-12 schools, gosh, I've been in that research space since 2013, the past 14 months have been kind of like a massive real-time high-stakes experiment. And I don't say experiment lightly or jokingly, but we did go from having very widespread adoption in school districts and individual schools across the country of some form of digital educational technology or ed tech, even before the pandemic. In some schools, the adoption was at that kids were actually using to learn. In some schools, it was more behind-the-scenes software programs and a whole range of other things. But to go from that to putting, as far as I can tell, our entire K-12 school system across the country online exclusively last spring, that's a huge, almost overnight shift. And we are going to be, as researchers, parents, policymakers, educators, and all other decision makers, we're going to be learning from that experiment, I think, for months and years to come.
And Leah, not only are you author, attorney, professor, and wrote the book Sharenthood, MIT Press 2019, check it out. You also helped start the Youth Law Project at New Hampshire Legal Assistance and worked to advocate for children in schools, especially children from disproportionately marginalized backgrounds. One of the things that you've spoken out about recently is the issue at the State House with respect to House Bill 544 and the impact that might have in the education system. What is your take on that? What is your view? And how do you think it will affect the educational system moving forward if that passes?
I think HB 544 is unconstitutional, both state and federal constitutions, and it is all wrong for New Hampshire. HB 544 really goes to the heart of our ability to educate young people about the realities of history, the realities of government, and just the realities of life. It also creates a pretty unprecedented level of intrusion and government monitoring of ideas. I was reviewing the text of HB 544 recently, and it would require that in each agency that there would be I'm reading now directly from the bill, each agency would have to assign at least one senior political appointee responsibility for ensuring compliance with the requirements of the policy. The policy being that the agency would take the requirements of HB 544 and create a policy for how it applies to its own operation. So just think about that for a second. Under law, each agency would have to have not a government employee, somebody who is immersed in the nuts and bolts of the agency, but a political appointee, so somebody who is answering to the dictates of whoever has appointed them, unfortunately. And that political appointee would have to make sure that there was a policy in place in that agency that would keep that agency from, quote, propagation of divisive concepts, end quote. Unfortunately, the divisive concept label is completely misleading. What is being called a divisive concept actually has to do with being able to comprehensively and accurately and impactfully teach our history.
Leah, we just have, I'm sorry, we just have like 20 seconds.
That's about it. We're going to have to wrap it up. Okay. We'll have to pick it. We'll have to pick it up at a later date, Leah, but thank you for being with
us
today.
Sorry about that.
We appreciate it.
Thank you, Leah.
Thanks for having me, folks. Bye-bye.
All right. Feldis and Kale, 1039 1450 WKXL, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion.